to the DPW committee meeting of Wednesday, January 20th, 2020. The new chairman, I didn't have an agenda for this meeting, so it's rather light, what Rob has, and I do want to take a couple questions from the audience afterwards about an issue. With that, we'll go over to Perry.
Thank you. So typically what I do is I compile a list of things that we conducted since the last meeting, and this and that, it was 2 months ago, this was 2 months ago, it wasn't a December meeting. So, as some of you may or may not know, part of the operations at the sewer plant, we have a septic receiving station is, and what that is there's companies that will suck out septic tanks throughout the county. They deliver it, we process it for them for a fee, and you know, that's something we have a permit from DEC to do that. So 2019, it was put in as a revenue item for $340,000. We exceeded that by $4,000. Just so that give you an idea of what the significance is of the septic numbers when I give them, it represents, and I've done the calculation down below, about just over 0.5% of what the flow is that goes through the plant, but it represents 27% of the revenue. So it pays for the debt service of the capital upgrade, and it also contributes a significant amount of money to the operations and management of the system, the plant itself. All in all, it's a $1.2 million budget for the sewer department. So it's not an insignificant operation, it's down there. So we did finish out, like I said, exceeding the revenue projection for 2019. The only part that I may just bring up is that one of the larger comes from Hudson Valley Creamery, which is where they make the goat cheese down in Livingston. We do expect at some point in the near future for that to sunset. They don't have the ability to treat their discharges down there, but they do have a grant to install an MVR, which is a process that will help clean up their discharge. So for now, it represents between $40,000 and $50,000 a year revenue. At some point that will disappear, which was always the plan. We did have a series of heavy rain events, and here I just go through, just letting the public know that these discharges, NY alerts from get sent for each of these. These are discharges from the contact tank, heavy rainfalls. One of the things that I just kind of bring your attention to is December 9th and 10th. I don't usually put the temperature down. The 9th was 40 degrees, the 10th was 46 degrees. It's going to be a recurring theme that will come up a couple times in my discussion or presentations tonight. So we haven't had any overflows in the month of January, but December was extremely heavy with rainfall and snow melt. So that said, we have a speedies permit in place that allows us to do an average daily flow of 2.8 million gallons a day. And if you take the total amount of flow that went through the plant in the month of December, divide that by the 31 days, we actually exceeded that amount by 3.1 million, so we exceeded it by just over a couple hundred thousand gallons average daily. So when we, when we exceed what our permit is, we have to file a non-compliance. The reason and the irony is that we had a consent order to construct a new sewer plant back in 2007, which we did. And in 2011, it was basically complete. So this new plant can handle a total of 17 million gallons, totally 6 million through the secondary process. We did what DEC required us to do. After we completed the construction of the plant, we filed all the necessary paperwork to modify our speedies permit, to take it from the 2.8 million gallons up to the 6 million gallons, which they haven't done. The paperwork's been sitting up in central office for, we submitted it in 2013. So the paperwork's been sitting up on somebody's desk for 7 years. So we had to exceed a permit that's basically a permit for a facility that no longer exists. So the irony is we could have stayed within the permit by turning off pumps, and shutting, not treating as much as we have the ability to do, which would have been silly. So obviously, we run the plant as it's designed to work, and we exceed it. The other part is because there was a serious amount of, a decent amount of precipitation with a lot of snow melt. And that was attributed to the flows. Picture three just shows the septic receiving tank. And, you know, part of the operations is we've got to bring in a series of vac trucks, just a lot of grit, which is stone and fine particulates do make its way in there. We spend, you know, anywhere from $25,000 to $30,000 a year getting grit out of all of the tanks from our secondary clarifiers, the digesters. It's just part of the process. It's, you know, the cost of doing business. But the good news is we have another revenue stream to supplement those activities. We did have sinkholes adjacent to the fence on the west side of the sewer plant. Because that's within the 100-foot buffer, we were required to get a permit, which we did get from DEC, so the permit is here. We did excavate where the sinkhole was, and we found that where the old overflow, when we upgraded the plant, we just tied into the existing overflow. but this was the original connection that was done in the mid-60s when the plant was originally constructed. And, you know, just had eroded away, broken apart. So we just formed it up and poured in concrete and poured in color. The, you know, one of the other things that is a continual issue at the sewer plant, because of the combined system, we do get a lot of heavy stuff, not just rocks or leaves that hit bar screens, which are at the front of the treatment process, but we get a lot of the old stones that were part of the original construction in the 1830s, a lot of bricks that were part of the construction as they went through the 1800s until they started doing the clay tile. So, you know, these beat up the racks, and so this is probably about the third time that some of these racks have been fabricated. The good news is that we have someone in-house who is excellent and is able to fabricate these things. So we're paying a couple $1,000s for the steel and the material, you know, as opposed to, which could easily be in the tens of thousands, actually, you know, go to a shop and have it fabricated. So, 6 and 7. And we just, there's a lot of grants that are in play now across the department. One of the ones, we did receive a $750,000 CBG grant for stormwater separation. This is a large project that started back in 2013 or 14. I think we made our first application and had our first award. So we've done portions of this work already. This was to do the largest section, which is actually down on Front Street, which is estimated about $1.5 million. $750,000 was part of it. We also made a $750,000 application for water quality improvement. Of that would be a 40-60 split between the city and the state. We were not awarded that, but we didn't expect to be awarded both of them. So the plan is to reapply for the WQIP again in the next round of CFA. Hopefully we can get that up there, and then we get $1.5 million project for about $350,000 of local money. And then, so that'll be the goal for that this coming year. We also, we did receive a WQIP in 2018, and all the documents are in place. It's been approved by DEC. And this involves construction upgrades of two of the pump stations. These pump stations, one was built in the 80s and one was built in the early 2000s. But it's to update the new pumps, drives, which basically make the pumps smart. You know, put some radio telemetry system on it. You know, the idea is to minimize CSOs. And in fact, with one of the pump stations, we think we can actually eliminate the outfall altogether, which would, you know, make CSOs from that pump station not possible. Switching to water. We've been, you know, over 5 years digging and installing water main on Short Street, Carroll Street, Prospect, portions of Harry Howard. 2 years ago, we started up Washington Street from Harry Howard. This past year, we came down Washington Street from 7th to 6th. The whole idea is to create a 12-inch main that is a backbone, so that way the, you know, we have all 12-inch going to the boulevards. Right now, they're connected by 4s and 8s, and they get constricted a little bit, so if there's an issue with the rest of the city, they end up getting starved pretty quickly. So this is part of it for, obviously, you know, we want to have enough flow for fire suppression. You've got, you know, a retiree of our school district, there's a nursing home, there's a, you know, Crosswoods is there. So, you know, there's a lot of play. We want to make sure that they have adequate water. The last phase and the little missing piece was the 500 block of Washington Street. And the reason that we can't do that is because there's 40 services that are there, and there's a lot of utility conflicts. So by the time we try and manage all of that, in addition to our book of business, which is hydrant flushing and water breaks and maintenance of the transmission main, the maintenance of the water plant, and all of our other responsibilities, there's just not really enough time for us to. It would take us a couple of years at least, and it would be a significant disruption for the people who live in that block. So it was always the goal to put that out for a grant opportunity, and we did so last year during the CFA process, and we were awarded a WIA grant, which is a water infrastructure or something. That was for just over $500,000. The bond resolution was approved by the council, and the application was made in last summer. So I met with the treasurer last week. It's just a matter of actually issuing the bond to cover the city's end of the work, and you know, then we can get that project going quickly. So that's a water project there. The just shows the last section of pipe that we put in for the 12-inch stub, and then we actually put a T and a tie it over to the existing 6-inch, which is by the Pocketbook Factory, so that way we've made a loop, and that 6-inch will actually end up being fed by the 12, and everything is connected and tied together. This is 540 for that services. One of the other, we did receive a lead service line replacement grant for just over $500,000 last year. The first goal was to find out whether or not we were going to be awarded the WIA grant, because we reasonably assumed that that 500 block of Washington Street, each of the services, is because of the age of the house, will be lead. So we're going to have that road ripped up anyway. We'll use the other Department of Health grant to upgrade those lead services. That'll leave about 60 services to be done citywide. And at that point, you know, we'll have to come up with some kind of a request form, and you know, come up with a public input as to who, you know, who's more interested. I think that, you know, if you have multi-unit dwellings, you're trying to kind of prioritize those, because there's, you know, there's more opportunities for the water to just be kind of latent because they just have larger internal plumbing. But you know, it's the first of them. Most of the other cities have received several rounds already, so something that we probably, once we execute the first round, we'll probably see more of this money in the future. So we have had a series of water breaks. We started this year on January 1st. That's the second year in a row we've had a break on New Year's Day. This year it was over by Allen Street and West Court. We've also had breaks. We had one this past Friday night on Glenwood Boulevard. There was another one in the 400 block of Columbia Street a couple weeks ago. So when you get the, you know, you get these little waves of bitter cold, it forces frost down into the ground, compacts the mains, and actually snaps them. Regarding the paving project that was completed, because I said we'd have a meeting in December, so there's some November stuff in here as well. You know, we have pictures of Railroad Avenue, East Court Street. You know, I went into greater detail on the report that I gave last time. But kind of the significance of these, you know, normally we're doing this during regular business hours and regular business days, but we issued a notice to proceed for the contractor to commence the work in August, and they had, you know, other business that was already in play and projected, so they didn't actually start doing a lot of the work until November here. And so this East Court was actually done on a Saturday. Railroad Avenue was done on a Saturday. Rossman Avenue was done on Veterans Day. So, you know, we put in the intersection at Worth and Warren. That was actually done the day before Thanksgiving. So, you know, we really did it as late as we've ever done it. We usually do the paving in October, September, and October. Let's see. Just one of the other things with the paving is, you know, the manhole rises as we bring the road up. There's different tools that we have to use to make the road match, the infrastructure, the utilities that are in the street, the water valves, this is for a sewer manhole. 14, you know, I just roughed out, since I've been superintendent, this is the fifth or sixth time we've done a CHIPS and a multimodal paving. So the orange lines represent roads that have been milled and or paved or overlaid since 2011. You know, you can see most of the cross towns, a lot of the thoroughfares going through Hudson, Front Street, Dock and Mill, part of your bike route. All right, so we did have a pretty large storm event in the beginning of December, and so I have the, you know, just screenshots of the four forecasts from the different TV stations. And the irony is that Steve reporting has a tendency to be over-exaggerated. He was actually pretty close to accurate, then he scaled it down. But everybody was figuring somewhere in the 8 to 12 range, and of course we got almost twice that, about 22 inches. So, you know, a couple of things that come up when we have these blizzards. You know, first of all, there's, you know, it takes a lot of manpower and it takes a lot of equipment, and it's big equipment and it's long hours. So we spent about $20,000 for that storm. That represented the guys on the plows during the event, but also the cleanup. And that's something that, you know, our neighbors don't really do. They come out and push snow during the storm, but they have wide open roads. They put wings down and they blow it into somebody's lawn, take out their mailboxes. You know, if they do their thing, then it's over. You know, that's a luxury we don't have. We have to push it off to the side, give everybody the opportunity to shovel their snow off their sidewalks, you know, challenging to get to the same spot, you know, around the curb, and then we come back and haul it away. So, you know, 17 is, you know, the view of what it looks like from our perspective in the middle of the event. You know, and a lot of, you know, every year we make certain equipment requests, and every year those equipment requests get denied. You know, I understand somebody drives by the garage on a Tuesday in July and they see the garage doors open and they say, you know, that Rob Perry, look at all the trucks, he doesn't need anymore. Well, this is what the garage looks like in the middle of a nor'easter. And that's with everybody out, you know, keeping the city at least open so that way emergency vehicles can get in and do their thing. After the storm, you know, cleanup is a significant thing for us. Every piece of equipment is out. This is a backhoe that's pushing snow around the corners so that way the snowblower can pick it up and pass. We're using a lot of contractors. We're using our vehicles. We use contractors because we simply don't have enough trucks to haul snow. Plus the contractors that we use, they're triaxles, so they can hold about three times what our trucks can do. Actually, after this storm, you know, we did make a call to some of our neighbors. And so the town of Greenport actually sent in an operator on a loader. So that loader you see on the bottom is in the municipal parking lot at for the health department, 325. They're loading one of our trucks. We also, the top one, you know, they sent a truck in to get loaded by the snowblower. The town of Claverick, which is the blue truck next to it, they just allow us to use it. So we put one of our guys into that truck. That truck holds nearly four times what one of our trucks do. So it's able to keep the productivity going in the wee hours of the night. Outside of the snow removal, that's the largest stuff. You know, there's all the crosswalks. And, you know, we have different equipment that we use to get the snow around the crosswalks. And, you know, sometimes it just boils down to a criminal physical labor. It's guys with shovels, you know, clearing the stuff away. And it's, you know, there's nearly 100 intersections in the city. There's 25 miles of road, and when you put 2 feet on all of it, it's a lot. Just going through all of that, intersections, and then, you know, it's a recurring thing. You know, we tell people to push the snow to the curb when they shovel their sidewalks, put it in their parking spot, you know, that way when the snowblower goes by, it can take everything away. So picture 25 shows, you know, how we'd like to have it done. 26 is, you know, this is, we went through with the snowblower, cleaned up, and then whoever this property owner is on State Street just decided to kick all the snow back into the road, which inevitably is going to get run over, it'll get turned into ice, and then, you know, it's could create a slip hazard for, just for themselves, because they're probably gonna park there anyway. So, then moving forward to, this is us putting in Santa's Village. And one of the things I want to draw your attention to is that this is on December 11th. So on December 9th, we received nearly 2 feet of snow. On December 2nd, we received nearly 2 feet of snow. And, there were a number of municipalities that, people were crying, making the issues about, about streets hadn't been cleaned up. There were one lane, it was impossible to get through in some of the major cities, Schenectady, Troy, Albany. And so we did put a serious amount of manpower out, and which, enabled Winter Walk to get off without too much of a hitch. But the reality is, Winter Walk was on a Saturday. On Monday and Tuesday following, there was nearly an inch and a half of rain. It was in the 40s, and that whole 2 feet of snow was gone just by nature taking away. So, you're going to come on, these decisions and discussions come around with, how much is Winter Walk worth to the city? And, do we need to spend $20,000 of overtime on contractors to prepare the city for a one-day event on one street when nature is going to take it all away a couple of days later? So, obviously, the decision was to go forward with the removal, and that's what we did. But it necessitated transfers at the end of the year. So that's part of it. Just to give you an idea, these are the old lights that come out of the trees. Every year, we purchase about $3,000 in lights. We only used to have lights in a couple trees and a couple blocks here and there. And then, that's kind of caught everybody's fancy and everybody likes it. I like it. I know it looks nice too. But it's expensive. It takes our guys about 2 weeks to go up there in the bucket and do it all. It is labor intensive, and it's not without its own cost. Other than that, this time of year is, absent snow, obviously we're not mowing lawns, we're not getting the water from the park ready for weekend events. So there's a different level of maintenance and inside work that gets done. Obviously the snow blower, we do full maintenance on after every time it's used, just to make sure that the next time they have an event, it's ready to go. From our insurance company, in one of the last surveys, there was issues with some of our older equipment, didn't have disconnects. And if you've seen in the news, you see some of these garages that catch fire, and that's because the equipment is, they have like a couple of batteries in there, and something can get shorted out, the equipment starts on fire, the next thing you lose a garage with, a couple million dollars worth of equipment. So these are the disconnects that we're installing, and they're standard on all new equipment, but they weren't when we purchased some of these things, so our mechanics are installing them themselves. It's the season where the park benches, I know they're not glamorous, but they're the ones that we have. Replacement ones are over $1,000 a piece. This is pretty cheap. We take the boards off, we sand down, repoly them, or paint them as need be, and then go reinstall them. Some of the other things that get done, in this instance, the car ran a red light or something like that, drove over the mailbox, or drove over the garbage can. That garbage can, I understand some people don't like the way they look. They're pretty sturdy. They're not going to withstand a car running into them. But they're $600 each. The signs, we do actually maintain an inventory of most of the city streets in the garage, so that way sometimes signs get stolen, sometimes they just get run over, and they're just, because they're on the intersections, and that's typically where you see your accidents. So we do, retain a pretty heavy inventory of different types of signs. Other inside work, just there's no parking signs that everybody loves to see come out. But the fact is we keep about 300 of them or so in inventory. When you think about we're doing snow removal, we're putting signs out for nearly 10 miles of street. So that takes a lot of signs. And inevitably they do get stolen or broken or borrowed and not returned. And so this is what we do. Set the wood shop. We are actually doing some painting down the garage. There's some leftover paint from an old inventory of street paint from like 2013. It's all solidifying and gummed up. Can't be used in the machine. so we're putting it on the wall. Used to get some use out of it. The other seasonal things is we're picking up the Christmas trees. I guess there was somebody online with a goat farmer saying that the goats eat the trees. So, I reached out to him and I said, well, if you want trees, we'll just put them here by East Court Street and you can just pull up. And I wish they asked me if we could deliver them. I'm like, we're collecting them for you and put them in one spot. He wants to deliver them. So obviously we're not going to deliver trees to goat farms outside the city. Other activities we've been putting in the signage for the Empire State Trail. This is something that they asked us to do, we agreed to, and they do reimburse us for the time and the material. The signs they actually had fabricated and they sent them to us. Some of the Unibar and everything else, we invoiced to them and they reimbursed us. So there'll be a resolution for that once we're completed to say, we want to invoice DOT for this. This is the amount, and blah, 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 amend the budget to reimburse us. Let's see. There's a recurring theme of cost and what it costs to do our business, which ultimately is your business. And we have a 5-year average about $150,000. This is real money, so it pays. There's a lot of concrete and blacktop and stone and paint and things like that. And it's. We do a lot of the labor ourselves, so it makes it certainly less expensive than contracting out, but there is a material cost, and $150,000 may sound like a lot of money, but you're really talking about just under $10,000 a month with the fuel costs and everything else that goes into it. It's a pretty big catch-all. Just some DOT stuff. Ferry Street Bridge. Originally, Amtrak was going to be providing design review for the bridge for Amtrak and CSX. Those agreements were signed 2 years ago, and everybody was fine with it until CSX decided last year that they're not fine with it. They want to conduct their own review. So last night, there was a resolution to establish an escrow account and sign an agreement so the CSX can review it. And so those documents will be sent off once the check is cut. The mayor's already signed the agreements, and CSX will conduct their own review. After that, the single biggest hitch is getting the bridge moving down in Region 8 in Poughkeepsie. Mm-hmm. It's been on a desk as a completed draft design for over a year. We were actually supposed to be well within final design at this point, and it's just the bureaucracy down there, that agency, and they just, just grinding to a stop. So we are kind of stalled there. Hopefully the CSX piece will at least get that done and we can, double our efforts on for the railroad for DOT. We also did receive a notice of proceed with the grant that Dominic applied for last year for the reflective crosswalk things. There's about 16 of them, I think, or something like that. So it's 16 crosswalks. So that was something that you basically were awarded last year and you just got the documents. So,
last year, yeah.
So this is the world of DOT. The good news is this isn't that big of a project, so I did speak with Heather. Apparently spoke with her already, but she needs to establish a capital budget. You need to have a transfer from the fund balance to fund it. At that point, assuming those are the ones that you guys want, or if there's different types or styles that have been updated since those. But anyway, we'll put out an RFP because it's just purchasing
the units.
The units themselves, yeah. All the labor and install is being done by my crew. So
it's very similar to the radar traffic center.
Yeah, it's not a huge thing. So it's just a question of, are those the ones that you want? If you're staying with those, then we'll use those as the specification. If there's something else that's newer or better since the 2 years that you requested, then we can talk about that. Because you can request whatever you want, really.
Yeah, just, I think we'll have a couple of demos come in to kind of get a feel.
That's fine.
Yeah.
And then once we know what it is that we're looking for, we'll make that the specification. If somebody wants to bid an equal, they can make that assertion. Mm-hmm. And just the last thing I have, I guess there was some discussion about fire department accessing from Academy Hill, or from the cemetery. And, you know, I just had a brief discussion with some of the firefighters, but just so everybody's on the same page, the cemetery roads aren't built as city streets. They're effectively about an inch of blacktop on top of grass. There's no subbase, there's no concrete, there's no stone. And, you know, picture 39, there was a box truck that was making a delivery to the water plant that made a wrong turn, went into the old section, and, you know, you couldn't even make the turn. I mean, it literally got buried in the mud. The other part of it is a lot of the roads we don't plow in the wintertime because nobody gets interred in the old section anymore, and you couldn't plow it and then salt it because salt requires vehicular traffic to activate it, so it doesn't really just sit on there and necessarily work that well. But just so everybody, you know, understands that when the Academy Hill was being built, there was an active fire plan that was done. I mean, they have their pump station that tied into the tank. There's a tank that's right there that has a hydrant on the back of it that they can draw water from. There's also the detention pond that has a couple hundred thousand gallons in it, and we installed a dry hydrant for them. So, I mean, I'm not sure what changed in the last 10 years, but I have to reach out to Tony to meet with him, but, you know, I realize he's got the new job over the county. But it's, like I said, it's not really practical for those fire trucks to, that's not really a reliable solution. I mean, for them to make those corners, we have trouble making them in some of the pickup trucks. They're just so tight. And like I said, the roads aren't designed for that kind of weight. So, all right. That's it from there.
How many, what's your crew size during a typical snowstorm? Of that size, let's say. A big one.
Well, I mean, it's everybody. I mean, we'll pull the mechanics. We'll put them out in, on tractors or things like that, working on some of the crosswalks. We'll switch the cemetery guys around. In fact, the storm was 36 hours long. So when the DPW guys went home to sleep, the water department guys kept the trucks going, so that way there was a 24-hour presence. You see in the baseball, when somebody hits the one side, they call it the shift, and they put everybody on one side. And that's literally what we do. We shift everybody from every other department and put them on the snow. But that said, at any given time, you're talking probably about 15 to 20 people just out from shoveling crews to small equipment to hauling, to plowing, equipment operators. You know, when we're doing snow removal, there's one guy who's just in the snow dumps doing nothing more than they dump the snow on the ground. He's pushing it up into big piles so that they can go back in and get the load up again. So there's a lot of support that takes place.
Questions from the committee? Dominic or no? I just want to turn it over to the audience. Theo Anthony's here. He just had we talked about this briefly before the meeting, and I assume, as we talked about it last night at the Common Council meeting, that this would be a revision of local law, but it does relate to, as everyone was mentioning to you, the definition of utility work. It's going to be also with Craig. I'm not sure how we discuss this, but I'll let Theo speak to it.
My name's Theo. I live on Short Street. I'm a full-time resident in Hudson. For the past 2 weeks, every single morning, starting on the dot at 7 a.m., there's been a construction crew starting construction work with jackhammers and concrete saws. It's kept up the entire neighborhood. The entire neighborhood is complaining about this. And
in the street?
It's on the side of the Galvin Armory. We live right across the street from the Galvin Armory.
I'm the street guy. If it's between the curbs, it's me. I don't deal with any.
So it's in the alleyway, and they said that it's a storm drain that they're working on.
Okay.
So we spoke to the crew. The crew sent us to Galvin. Galvin ignored our calls. He called the police. The police sent us to code. Code did not return our calls. The police finally went out there with a decibel meter. It's well above the 65 to 75 decibel range within within the code.
Well, just so we can talk about, if this is a discussion, let's have it.
Yeah.
Any type of utility work is exempt in the noise ordinance.
I was about to say that. So.
So if you go to there's a list of exemptions on the bottom, and utility work is included.
I'd love to make an appeal for common sense here that like the entire neighborhood is having it's non-emergency work that's being done, and I would love to bring non-emergency utility work under the same heading as the rest of the construction work. It is entirely obnoxious. We've asked them. They stop their work day at 2 or 3 p.m. It would be so easy just to shift it back so the guys stay a little bit later. We have a lot of elderly people. We have a lot of like children in our neighborhood. No one is able to sleep. And I'm exhausted, emotional about this. I just really want to sleep. And there's absolutely no recourse. There's no one to talk to. So if there's anything that can be done, it would be greatly appreciated.
Could there be a way to parse out non-emergency utility work if it's not done by the city?
I mean, well, typically we don't. I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out what's going on, because we tell the contractors that non-emergency stuff we don't allow in the streets during the wintertime, because once the asphalt plant closes, you can't do a restoration there's a product called Cold Patch, that's what we use in potholes, but it's not really a good product. It works temporarily as a fix. But you know, that's why if individuals want to do a water service connection or sanitary service connection in the wintertime when it's not emergency, we tell them to wait until the asphalt plant closes. So that way when we do, because right now if you put coal patch on a trench and we get a foot of snow, our plows are just going to rip it up. We're going to rip the street up. It's going to damage our plows, damage our equipment, and things of that nature. So I can tell you, I don't have a clue what you're talking about. I mean,
were they at it again this morning?
I mean,
they're at it this morning. I mean, they're doing jackhammers. I mean, maybe they're saying it's like it's utility work, but like they're digging up the entire.
I can take a look at it, but this is the first I've heard of it, so I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Really.
Maybe you can take a look, because it would be. I mean, I'd be open to amending the code to say if there's any.
Yeah, I can't give an opinion without.
Right.
You know,
yeah, without you seeing it. So.
I don't know what's going on.
This is in the alley.
It's in the alley connecting 5th Street and Short Street.
It's Grove Alley.
Yeah, exactly.
And is it
CD work?
They're not doing a door, are they?
It's people hired by Galvin.
Agrisem is the company. They are hired by Galvin, and it's between the alleys, like right adjoining. It's confusing because they're doing a bunch of stuff on the library, on the armory right now, basement work, front area, but the side they claim is the storm drain, which would fall under
utility. Well, just so that we understand, even if we made some kind of prohibition based on them, you do realize they're going to be digging in the spring, in the summertime.
If they could start not at 7 a.m., like, and they could just save the loud work until like after 8 a.m. or something.
Because that's important. It's an emergency, you understand.
Well, emergency's in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
We get a water break. I mean, I showed you pictures of water breaks. They're at 2 o'clock in the morning. Or hit concrete, that's the way it goes.
So I can understand that.
One thing I understand what you are meaning, but also the contractor, whoever working, what time they hire their employee, you need to look that one too also.
Well, it's basically about the regulation that we have, regardless of who's hired or not. So
Building code for, like, that Craig deals with, I think it says, like, from 7 to 6, right, or something like that?
For emergency work, seven to six, but it has to be some sort of noise ordinance.
There's like starting at 7 a.m. You can make you can do work so long as it's like below 65 decibels.
That's what I guess they're running jackhammers.
They're well above that, and we had them come out and take a spot reading the decibel. Even them just running the excavator, which is the quietest thing that they're doing, hit 71 decibels, so you can imagine a jackhammer is like...
I don't have to imagine, I know what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like...
It's the business I'm in.
Yeah, it's just obnoxious and it's disrespectful to the people who live there, and the crew has been...
I don't know if there's anything I can do, but I'll look at it.
Could we get a look for someone out there? It seems crazy. We'd like to stop it.
Even given the exemption from the noise requirements, is there a technical way that this noise can mitigate?
Not a jackhammer.
Not a jackhammer. I mean,
that's always a work.
The reason why we're coming now is because they are on contract through the summer, and so, I mean, we can't, like, just can't continue like this through the summer, you know, at least, like, for our sanity and everyone else in the neighborhood. I mean, this is the entire block, you know, the half the block that actually lives there, you know, isn't Airbnb, so.
Well, I can tell you, this one, I mean, they're not operating under, I mean, a permit from us is just an opening permit. I mean, we don't really regulate their business. You know, it's not like code enforcement where he's making inspections. I mean, we make sure that the permit is really just a way for the city to charge a fee, you know, so that it covers the cost of the materials and the final restoration. And it's not like, you know.
So, yeah, and Craig can.
I mean, you know, there's some, like I said, there's some constraints, but.
So Craig couldn't give a stop work order unless we change the threshold for.
Yeah, I don't.
Are they working on private property or are they on Hudson property?
I mean, that's the thing.
Who knows the alleys? I mean, it's all nebulous. I mean, half the times you've got the street goes onto the private property, and what looks like the street is private property, and what looks like the house is actually built.
Well, who's going to make that determination?
Hold on, Bill.
Is anybody going to figure out?
That's what we're trying to find out here.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree. It's the first I heard of it, so.
Yeah, I would love to, like, I mean, it's just, every single day is like another morning, and, like, it's just, they're adding up, you know, and it's, I understand that they have to work, and I fully respect the development going on, but, like, it's getting to the point where it's infringing on, you know, my work and everyone else's work, and, you know, yeah.
Matt? Okay, well, we stick around for legal committee when we talk about that. Anyone else? Peter?
Yeah, just to, Rob, I also love the lights. I was curious, how much does it cost a season to do the lights on the trees?
Well, the lights themselves are $3,000.
Yeah.
You know.
But in terms of all the labor putting them up.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's a two-man crew, and it takes them probably about 10 days, two full weeks. So, I mean, some of the guys, it's just like at your house, right? Some people like doing things better than other things. So we got one guy that, you know, if he does it, it doesn't look as nice and it takes a little longer, and somebody likes to make it look a little nicer and stuff. Like this guy, you know, so he takes his time, but I think it looks nicer.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have like crazy crisscrosses and axes. It looks like it's got something.
Yeah. What's the even as a ballpark figure? I feel like that the lights on the trees bring a lot of value to the experience of Hudson.
Yeah, that's why it was even up till daylight savings time. At that point, you know, because there's less time to notice it. I don't know if you're figuring 10 hours, two guys, you know, if you're doing with Benny's and everything, it's, you know, 90, you know, probably $900.
$900 plus yeah. $3,000 for the lights.
So,
thank you.
And the power, of course.
We might have to adjourn this because legal committee meeting is basically now, so.
I have a few questions.
Well, we're going to start a new meeting if you want to stick around.
Tom, what did you tell me?
I don't know.
You told me that John could lengthen the meeting if the people had questions.
I can't now because we have another meeting that's starting.
But that, Tom.
That's kind of weak.
45 minutes.
I mean.
My question to you, Rob, is are you okay with it only being 45 minutes so there's very little or no public input at meetings? Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm absolutely fine.
You're okay with very little or no public input?
I think we have quality public input.
Really?
That's what I count on.
I'd be open to rescheduling the meeting so we don't have to have it on.
Rob, why is Promenade Park covered in snow and ice now? Why hasn't it been cleared, and why does it never get cleared very well?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
Do you care?
I do care.
Do you?
Yeah.
Then why hasn't it been taken
Bill,
care of?
Bill, wait around so we can talk about this.
Excuse me?
I have to adjourn for my next meeting as they start right now.
You care, but you allow it to remain.
I didn't schedule this.
A slippery, dangerous mess.
Bill.
You're okay with that, Rob? Just yes or no?
All right. Meeting adjourned.
I'll take that as a yes. Shame on you.
We'll reschedule the meeting so we don't have the same back-to-back situation.
Why don't you start early?